It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to Healthy Mind Matters on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining us for Healthy Mind Matters. I'm Maria Chaleos. Today we are talking about the role that we play as families, as parents, in preventing death by suicide. With me today, Robert Loftus. He's the manager of Behavioral Health Crisis and Stabilization Therapy at Intermountain Primary Children's Hospital, and Jessica Curtis, who is a clinical social worker at Primary Children's Hospital. When we took a break, we were talking about risk factors. So let's go into that just a little bit more. I'm not sure which one of you would like to address this, but let's talk about what the risk factors are when it comes to suicide prevention.
One of the things we look at, as Jessica was saying earlier, is looking at a kind of a strengths-based perspective, identifying, helping the teen or child to identify what their strengths are, what the family believes their strengths are, and then kind of looking at ways, how do we use those strengths, how do we identify concerns and coping skills for the family. So we generally refer to the risk factors as warning signs. So in other words, what we're trying to help the family say is, what led up to this? What would tell you that you were going to be in a similar crisis in the future? And then after we identify those, then it's more about shifting the focus to like a, what are the skills you can use? What are things that would help you to deal with those kinds of stressors that are coming up?
So what would be the warning signs?
So we have the kids identify different categories. So there could be people that if they're around that they know that's a warning sign. There's situations, there's thoughts, and then feelings. And we want them to identify in all those different categories what their warning sign for them individually could be.
So is this something that the family sits down together, or at least the parent and the young person sits down and they do together?
Yeah, we want it to be really collaborative. And so typically it's the patient, it's their family, and it's the clinical social worker doing it together.
Okay.
And oftentimes we'll meet with the child privately as well. And it's sometimes what's triggering to them might be different than what the family believes is triggering to them. But that's where the conversation starts. And I think that's the really important part.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. How willing are teenagers to talk about some of these things in front of their parents?
I think it depends. Typically, we'll work on what we call, it's called a safety plan. We'll work on that. I'll go in with the patient and work it with them, and then I'll go in with the parent and work on it with them, and then we'll come together and share it. But typically, they're really willing to work together.
So how do people get to you to begin with? Like, it's not just a parent seeing some... Well, just tell me, how do they get to you to begin with, usually?
I mean, I think that's a great question. So we're actually based in the emergency department of Primary Children's, but we don't want people to have to spend their time coming to an emergency department just to get this kind of help. Obviously, if they're in a crisis, that's exactly where we want them. But I think Intermountain Healthcare and other organizations are looking at putting these kinds of things out into the community. So, for example, we encourage people to talk with their primary care physicians. And, you know, I know that Intermountain's doing has an initiative right now to educate all the primary care physicians about safety planning and about integrating mental health into the practices in the community. And some of them have, you know, therapists and social workers based in their practices. And so we're hopeful that as that happens throughout the system, that we're able to, you know, people can get that without having to, you know, wait until it becomes a crisis.
Right. So you're most often seeing them when they have reached that crisis point. But I think as a parent, I don't want to reach that point, right? How do I make sure I don't get there? I mean, I know we can't avoid all of these things, but as a parent, we'd like to avoid as many as possible. So what would be your best advice? When do we know it's time to really seek help?
I mean, I think that's a great question. Kind of what we were talking about earlier, I think when you're able to have that conversation with your child or your teen, And, you know, if you get maybe a non-committal answer, or if you get like, or they say, hey, actually, yes, I have been thinking about suicide, or sometimes I feel hopeless, I think that's the time to get help. Often it hasn't reached a full-blown crisis, so they may be just having thoughts. They might not have a plan or any kind of intent to kill themselves, but they may have said, you know, I feel like I don't fit in. I'm not part of the social circle I'd like to be part of. And they start to have these kind of feelings of hopelessness, and that's really the time that we can intervene and help, you know, people identify their strengths.
Right.
And
some of the things you're talking about are so difficult, because I would imagine many teenagers at some point feel that they don't fit in. Things aren't going exactly the way they would like them to go. Their friends go off with other friends or whatever it is. So that's where I think the real difficulty comes in for parents, is knowing when they're dealing with hormones and normal, mm-hmm. you know, things that teenagers go through, and then when it's moved to that next level.
I mean, I like to put that in terms of safety for parents. So in other words, if a child, you're right, children will go through those crises where they have, you know, conflict with peers, or they're not fitting in. And then but if you can get the conversation to a place where you're talking about, are you safe? That's where we really feel like it matters, because it's one thing for someone to feel out of place or not fitting in. It's another thing to feel that to the extent that they don't feel safe, you know, to around themselves, you know, that they might hurt themselves or kill themselves. So sometimes, you know, we're not going to get a lot of openness from teens particularly, but I think if you can at least couch it in terms of, do you think you can be safe, that's a really good starting point.
Did you want to add something there, Jessica, before we take a break?
No, I think a really good place to start is just that open communication, and then there are lots of resources throughout the Valley that we can focus on that can help the family in those situations.
All right. Again, that crisis line for anyone who may need it, 1-800-273-TALK. And again, the Safe UT app is a great place to turn. We'll be right back on Healthy Mind Matters.